Hey, it's Mike from Go Cell Phone Repair, the website that gives you the information, tools, and parts that you need to fix your own phone. How's that for an intro? I needed to throw that in at some point because I don't think I've ever really mentioned much about the website. But what I do every Friday is kind of recap a few of the highlights of what's going on in the world of wireless. And I gotta say that today is going to be a relatively short podcast. I'm literally about to walk out the door, but I wanted to at least touch on a couple of things that happened during the week. I just have so much stuff on the schedule that I'm really trying to figure out how to make this thing work on Fridays earlier in the day so everyone can download it sooner. And at the same time, I have a lot of schedule conflicts. So I'm thinking that maybe there's a way I can do this on the job or on the way to the job or something along the lines of multitasking. So I'm getting more done at once because I just got so much on my schedule right now. But hopefully that will be cleared up a little later, or I will figure out an alternative. But a couple of the headlines I did want to discuss, one of them was from ZDNet, and that's Apple iCloud hack threats get worse. And here's what we've learned. And long story short, there is a organization, London-based, called the Turkish Crime Family, which apparently has claimed to have access to 250 million iCloud accounts and has been threatening to remotely wipe all kinds of devices from Apple that are connected to the cloud, so iPhones, iPads, MacBooks, and so forth. And I want to save you a click here. Long story short, they found that there was actually a breach from the website last.fm and LinkedIn social networking site back from 2012. So this is some really old information that they had. The people from ZDNet apparently went through to confirm whether or not these were real accounts, and apparently a very small percentage of them were. Many of them aren't being used anymore. Hopefully most of those people have changed their passwords by now, but you should absolutely do that on a regular basis, despite how frustrating it is to have to change your password and remember what the new one is. I really hate going through this, especially when you have literally these days like 50 or 100 or maybe even more passwords. And what you don't want to do is write them down. And if you do want to store them in some sort of secured application or document somewhere, the thing is, if you've got all those passwords in one spot, if that account that you're storing them on or if that document that you have them stored on is ever compromised, then somebody has the key to all of your passwords. And I want to give you a little tip here, just an idea that I read about and kind of made a few tweaks to it, but this is what I've done with my passwords to make them easier to remember, but impossible for other people to copy and use elsewhere. I never record my entire password. I record bits and pieces of it, and then I have other parts that I store in my brain so that hopefully no one can compromise that, although that's questionable nowadays. But if you record part of your password in one place and part of it in another place, or you have it memorized, it makes it much more difficult for people to figure out what it actually is. And you know, if you remember back when they breached the iCloud a couple years or so ago, back with all those celebrities that had their information leaked, what had happened is it was very easy at the time and now to Google anyone who is a politician, celebrity, you know, very well known and so forth, and find out the information that will help you to recover a password. So if you record your favorite pet's name or your city of birth or your mother's maiden name and that sort of information, and you use those in your password recovery settings for the questions that you have to answer, well, if anyone can go online and look at your Facebook page or Google you and find out information about you and figure out what your first pet's name is, obviously it's going to make it much easier for them to reset your password. So for that reason, it becomes much more complicated when you set up the password in the first place. So you may not want to actually use your real first pet's name or your real mother's maiden name. Gosh, that's hard to say. And then at the same time, how do you then remember what that other answer is that you put as the security question? So obviously you have to be a little creative there, but unfortunately just going with the default of whatever that may be is not always going to be the safest option, not to mention the fact that a lot of password forms are restricted and have very detailed requirements as far as what you have to enter. You know, you've got one that has to have a symbol, you've got others that can't have a symbol, you have some that require numbers and a capital letter and others that can't, certain digit, you know, number of links. So you've got to come out with all these different passwords for every different sites, and it makes me insane, I got to tell you. So, but the bottom line here is, one thing, do change your password often. Secondly, if you have the option for two-factor authentication, by all means use it. I've got my accounts, some of my accounts, where they have that option available set up so that if I've got a new device, so other than my computer and my phone that I'm already using or any of my tablets, if I go somewhere else to log into my account, it's going to send me a text message with a code that confirms that it's actually me trying to log in. Now, if you have an iPhone or an Android device, you will want to disable the feature on your phone that allows those messages to come through without entering your passcode, because of course, if someone gets a hold of your phone, all they have to do for the two-party authentication or the two-factor authentication is attempt to log in if they have your password, and then of course the authentication comes to that device. So another good argument for putting a password on your phone, your computer, and so forth. Now, I try to avoid politics, discussion of politics on this podcast for a reason. It's not, I don't think, what people want to talk about or hear about here, but sometimes it's impossible to avoid. So if you didn't already hear about this, and you hopefully did, it's been all over the news, the House of Representatives has indeed voted in favor of this new law that would allow ISPs to track everything that you do on your internet connection. So whether it's through the Wi-Fi in your house, or you have your computer directly plugged in, or you're using your phone through your Wi-Fi. And I would have to assume, obviously, that this is going to also include your ISP if you have a data connection on your phone. So anything that you're using that connects to the internet, if this gets signed into law by the president, and there's really no reason to think that it won't, your ISP can basically do what Google does, and that is collect all the information that you access on the internet and then sell it to third parties who want to know what to target when they have advertising that they're going to put into your feed, so to speak. You know, whether it's on Facebook or whether it's on your phone somehow, or you're going to forums, wherever it is. Basically, if there's money to be made, the more information the advertiser has about you, the easier it is to target what you're looking at and what you're interested in. Well, if that wasn't enough, Verizon apparently is going to pre-install spyware, in quotes, on their Android phones in the future in order to more efficiently collect that user data. So they have already, you know, before this law has even gone into effect, they have already started to build or are planning to build in spyware on your phone that will tell them exactly what it is you're searching for. And the short answer here is that it's, or the short description is that they have something called App Flash, which is a universal search bar that will come pre-installed on the home screen of all Verizon Android handsets. So instead of going to Google or Bing or Yahoo or whatever it is that you're using, you'll have a convenient icon on your home screen that you can search the internet and surrounding businesses and whatever it is that you happen to be looking for in your area, and that will automatically upload all of that information directly to Verizon so that they can use that for advertising, and if they decide to, they can sell it to third parties in order to allow them to target you for their advertising, which is, you know, you would think easy enough just not to use it. Well, you can also get rid of this application apparently in one of two ways. One, you can root your device, which is a little complicated and can be dangerous for people who don't know exactly what they're doing. But if you're able to root the device, you can actually remove that application from the phone. But apparently, is from what I'm reading here, you will also be able to disable that application without the root. So whether you want to take their word for it that it's actually disabled when you select that option, that's up to you, obviously. But if you don't want Verizon to have every bit of information as far as what you're interested in, you will, you know, I got another answer. How about not buy a Verizon phone? You know, you could always buy a phone that's unlocked, can't you? And use it on the Verizon network, or will that not work with CDMA? I suppose you could always get an older phone or get a phone that is, not an Android, but then what is your other option? There's iOS, and that's almost it. There are a few other options out there, but not many popular ones, unfortunately. All right, so this one is from The Verge. It's called Think Hard Before Buying an All-Glass Bezel-Free Smartphone. And essentially what it says, and I'm happy to see someone publish something about this right now, what it's saying is that before you get too excited about the fact that the new Galaxy S8 and more than likely the new iPhone 8 will have almost edge-to-edge glass on the front of the screen in order to give you effectively more screen space on the phone, here's the thing to consider. You're adding more fragile, you know, more real estate on that device that is easier to break and scratch. And smash or anything else. So this is the one thing that we saw when the iPhone 4 launched. If you don't remember, before that we had the iPhone 3GS, which had a glass screen, which was very susceptible to damage, but we also had a plastic back that was relatively durable. You know, it would get scratched up over time, but it was nice and rounded on the back, so it felt very comfortable in your hand. And the moment that we saw the iPhone 4 launch, the first thought that went through my mind was, wow, twice as much glass, twice as many repairs coming in. Now, obviously, the back panel was a lot less expensive to repair, but it was still relatively common for people to break the back panel on their phone. However, because of the way that the hardware is situated on the inside and because of the weight of the LCD, the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S tended to land face down. So it was much more common for us to see the LCD and the glass on the front break than the back panel. And the difference between those two was very significant at the time as far as cost. You know, you can get a rear panel a couple of years ago, let's say like 3 years ago, I think you could get a rear panel for an iPhone 4 for like, I don't know, $10. But at the time, the LCD was still probably $35-$40, something in that range. So it was, you know, double or three times the replacement cost for that part. Not to mention that the labor was much more involved compared to just taking out two screws and replacing the back panel. Well, the same, it looks like we're going to kind of go towards that same trend again by putting more glass on phones. And remember, in order to have NFC or wireless charging on the iPhone 8, they will have to put a glass back on the phone again instead of having a metal housing. And if that happens, guess what? You drop your phone front or backside down, it's not going to matter. Something's going to break. So a very good thing to keep in mind before you go shopping for a new phone. And, you know, I can't even exclude Samsung from this either because they are supposed to be making all of their phones going forward with that curved edge that has glass that goes all the way around the side, which for me is not really that exciting. I mean, I've heard a few people say that, yeah, it's kind of cool to be able to see a text message coming through while your phone's sitting down flat on the table and you don't get the glare from the top. But really, is the functionality that important on having your screen curve around the edge? Because the trade-off is, if you ever have to get that screen replaced, it is going to cost you significantly more than a phone that does not have a curved edge. It just has the old school flat, I'm already calling it old school, right? The flat screen like we have on the Galaxy S7 standard version. So we'll have to see how that turns out, but I would say, yes, this article is worth reading or at least considering this before you go out and look at new phones. Think about how often in your history you've broken a phone, and if you have, take that into consideration, because when you break this new phone that has edge-to-edge glass, it's going to cost you more money. And I know that a lot of you are thinking right now, well, just get a heavy-duty case, and I'm all for that. If you want to get something that is highly protective and prevents the phone from being broken, that is a good option. And at the same time, I know a lot of people who prefer not to put a big bulky case on their phone. So, you know, if that's you, this is definitely going to be worth consideration. Samsung apparently will be bringing back, according to the New York Times, their Galaxy Note 7. But there's another article on Reuters that says that the Note 7 will not be sold in the US. So, by the way, I did a video back in December where we sent in, basically I called Samsung, I had them on the phone, I record the whole video so everyone can kind of hear the conversation and the process. And we had a Note 7 that had to be sent in because of the recall. We sent it in and we just got the refund check last week. So seriously, almost 3 months it took for that refund to come. And I do want to mention, I think this was very important. After 2.5 months, we were kind of thinking, are these guys even going to send this refund check? They told us it would be, I want to say 6 to 8 or 8 to 10 weeks when I talked to them on the phone. So we knew it was going to take a while, but it was just, we didn't see any progress, like no communication from them, no indication of where the phone was or had the refund been processed or anything like that. So we contacted them again about 3 weeks ago. And what do you know, 2 weeks later, the refund check came through. So what I'm getting at here is that if you sent in your Galaxy Note 7 for a refund during the recall and you haven't heard anything from Samsung, do not hesitate to call them and check up on the status of your refund, because it may take you contacting them to prompt that process to, I don't want to say get started, but for whoever's signing the check to get that thing pushed through and get it to you. More bad news for Samsung. Apparently, an outlet store, a Samsung outlet in Singapore, caught fire, causing the shops in a mall to close temporarily for safety and cleaning, although no one appears to really know what started the fire. But it's crazy. This is becoming a regular thing. It's like every time I look at the news, there's something about a Samsung store or phone or battery catching on fire somewhere. So, wow, I guess be careful. I mean, really, if you think about it, this could be, unfortunately, a big deal breaker if there are problems with the Galaxy S8. So I hope that they don't rush this thing. And, you know, we got a preview of it. If you haven't looked, there's a new video out that actually shows what the phone looks like. It will be available later next month. I think it's the 20th or the 21st. But if something like this goes wrong with the Galaxy S8, I got to say, that's probably going to be the point where even forgiving customers are going to say, you know what, this is too much of a pattern. There's a trend here. I don't want my phone to blow up. I don't want my house to catch on fire. Samsung, I think right now they're just kind of in that zone where one more big mistake, and if you own Apple stock, you will probably stand to gain a lot of value if for some reason Samsung has a major problem here and they're not able to sell or meet their target for sales for this next handset. So we will stay tuned and see what happens. It'll probably be a few months after the release before we know the answer to that. But I hope, I sincerely hope that they don't have these kind of problems, not only so that people don't get hurt, but so that we still have another competitor in the market, because right now it's Samsung and Apple. And if one of those two companies went away for some reason, or if one of those two companies was not able to make their customers happy anymore, then we would have one major manufacturer who makes everything and makes all the rules and sets the prices, and that's never good for the customer. So if something does go bad with Samsung or with Apple in the future, I really hope that another company can step up and kind of fill that void. And in fact, even if these guys keep doing what they're doing and continue to be successful, it will be nice to see someone else rise up and offer an alternative that is going to be able to reach the kind of popularity that Apple and Samsung have at this time. All right, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed. I know that this was a very short one. As always, you can always shoot me a tweet at FixMyCellPhone. You can look me up on YouTube or Facebook. Just search for Go Cell Phone Repair. Actually, just search for Go Cell Phone Repair and you'll find the website, the social media sites. And if you can't get a hold of me through one of those, do not hesitate to email. It's mike@gocellphonerepair.com. I will answer you as soon as possible. Like I said, I've got a lot of messages piling up, but I make it a point to do my best to respond to every question, comment, or any sort of input that you offer. Thanks again for checking this out. I'll be back on Monday to talk about the cell phone repair. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be back on Tuesday. I'm rescheduling this thing because it's just difficult to make Monday morning podcasts happen consistently. So this will be on Tuesday next week. And until then, have a great weekend. I will talk to you later.